Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the show. Vassas, over to you.
He's got the finest moustache since Freddie Mercury and the finest television show since television. Season 3 of the wonderful Ted Lasso continues next Wednesday on Apple TV Plus. So please welcome a man who, like ice cream and a Billy Joel concert, never disappoints. It's Jason Sudeikis!
Oh boy. How about that? Freddie Mercury and I, that, and also our vocal range. You know, our mustaches and vocal range.
How are you, mate?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
I have never, ever interviewed my favorite person who plays my favorite character from my favorite TV show whilst it's my favorite TV show in all the years I've been doing this. So I'm probably going to mess this up.
As I said, let's mess it up together.
Let's mess it up together.
We're very flattered.
Oh, my goodness me. Congratulations to you and your friends on all the success for Ted Lasso.
Thank you.
Because it's just such a great show.
Thank you.
It's so magical. It's a gift. The algorithmic brain that is his heart, his soul, his philosophy, whose is that? Which of you lot does that come from? Or what combination of you does it come from? Because the speeches, you know, there's a little bit of borrowed material. You know, you're doffing your cap to things that have been said profoundly in the past by people who we'd love to hear from and have made the world a better place. But there's a lot of original profundity in there. Where's that from?
I think it's a collective of. I mean, if not any of us individually, but it's certainly the spirit that sort of surrounds this thing. I'm as shocked and surprised as anyone that it exists. I mean, if you get down to like actual the typing and the writing of the speeches, it depends who's probably saying them and what moment. If there were specifics that you want to know, I could probably offer those. But I can only speak towards what the enthusiasm that we have when making the show, that somehow is seeped out of Apple Television, and it's found its way into other people, into the audience, and we're, you know, happy to, you know, enjoy the ride with you guys, you know. But I always talk about our writer's room is in those speeches that like Ted's reference level or the show's reference level is the reference level of all those 10 to 12 people, you know, really, really sharp men and women, you know, that we've had the last 3 years almost consistently from the first day of writing to the, you know, our final day of shooting. And that's, you know, I think that the show rises to that occasion.
It's so beautiful. It's all so wonderful. And we were talking about all the different characters earlier on and about the obviously backstories. And it's, you know, if you invest enough in a character, the character will then tell you what that character wants to say. But what's different about Lasso is, you know, compared with all the greats, you know, you can name a Taxi, Friends, Fawlty Towers, The Office. People obviously speak differently because they're different people. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that Sam has Sam speak, you know, Ted has Ted speak, yeah. Coach Beard has Beard speak. They all speak their own language and they have mini monologues and those happen to be exchanges which become conversations. But I've never known characters have such a deep sort of foundation to their fountain of being.
I mean, thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
It's not a question.
No. I'll take it that way. But yeah, I know when doing rewrites, like I'll rewrite scenes, I find myself often talking to myself as the characters, you know, because they have different cadences. They have certainly different experiences and different ways they're perceived in the world. And it's fun to sort of operate in those things. Because if monologues are interesting enough for, you know, dramatic academies, you know, acting schools, even, you know, people, casting directors to, you know, sort of, I don't know, ascertain someone's skill level or depth, then why wouldn't a dialogue or why wouldn't a group scene? You know, those are all just multipliers and it's really, really fun to like mess around in those waters, you know? And so we try to do that as much as possible. And yeah, and then by the time, that's when we're just writing it. Then by the time you give it over to the actors, they've all taken these characters onto themselves, you know, and we offered right up front, like, hey, if this is say it the way you know you would say it. Like, anglicize it for us. You know, yeah. You know, we had like the Higgins character saying ma'am a lot. And yet the very first scene he did with Hannah Waddingham that Jeremy Swift did, it sounded like he said, yes, mom. Yes, mom. And it's like, ooh, that makes the scene a lot different. Okay, let's get rid of the ma'am. So that's like a small example of, you know, trying to like make things, you know, feel like, you know, more authentic and more real to the person playing it, but also to the place that we're, you know, performing in, you know, that being here, you know, versus bringing a bunch of Brits over to LA and having to put it on. It's like, no, Brendan and I, you know, moved here and just, you know, just we're better actors that way when we actually have to live the thing versus just, you know, pretend.
Yeah, it's sort of a more natural form of method acting in a way.
Exactly.
It's a less annoying form of method acting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, less off-putting. No, we've gone to matches. We drink pints in pubs. Like, you know, the only darts we played, unfortunately, at this point, have been, you know, on the show itself. But yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
We really want to be fish out of water.
I mean, Brendan loves football. You've talked about this a lot. You know, he knows loads about football. You've learned a bit about football. Some of the actors were footballers and now are actors.
Yeah,
which is completely awesome.
But the boom guy knows, you know, football, and the prop gal knows football. It's like we wanted sincerely. I mean, and we were afforded that opportunity by, you know, the good folks at Apple and Warner Brothers to like, yeah, go ahead, we'll schlep you over there.
All right, quick fire questions.
Yeah, please.
Is the beer in the pub real?
No.
What is it?
I think they did. It's like near beer, or whatever. What's really ironic because my uncle George is an actor. He played Norm on Cheers, and he drank, you know, fake beer for, you know, many, many years, 11 seasons, you know, and now I'm doing it myself.
Have you had proper parties in the pub? Like, you know,
we had a couple things, but nothing, no, because it's a, you know, it's a set that we made to look like the place Crown, the Prince's Head over there in Richmond. Yeah.
Okay. Ted lives at number 9.5.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
That was one of the ones we just could have slipped by, that we just let it be. Yeah, because, you know, doing it what we do now, we probably would have done 9.75, right? Like Harry Potter.
Well, I thought it was a nod to Harry Potter, but it couldn't be Harry Potter.
Exactly. That might have been what it was. That might have been a Joe Kelly special, because he's the Potter fanatic, and at least the me, Brennan, and Joe.
I watched that lovely interview you did in New York for Variety when you were all on stage, one of those gang show interviews.
Oh, sure, sure.
That was so cool, wasn't
it? It's best.
But I was very sad to learn of the passing of Brett Goldstein.
Yeah, I know.
What happened there?
Just when we realized we had him, we lost him.
Right, for people who don't know, he's not dead, I don't think.
No, not at all.
And that's his real name, and he plays Roy Kent, of course.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that, and how come you thought he was dead for a bit?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I can't even remember at that point, other than, you know, sometimes maybe he'll go AWOL on text. Not even then. No, I've never thought the guy will die. I don't think the guy will ever die. He takes too good care of himself. He loves to work. He loves people. Until they turn off and shut down all the stand-up clubs, that guy's going to live forever.
Ted is 10 this year, isn't he? Even though he didn't get a name for a while.
Right.
Because it was back in 2013 that you first did a Ted Lasso kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you named him in your swimming pool one day.
Yeah.
Tell me about the timeline of those particular two things.
Well, no, I mean, yeah. So in the summer of 2013 or the spring of 2013, NBC Sports acquired the rights to show the Premier League over there in the States. They want to do a commercial. So they asked me if I would do it. Looked at stuff, came up with an idea. I said, can I bring on a couple people to help work on this? They already had a great ad agency and a really clever director of the commercials, and they're like, sure. So I immediately was like, okay, it's gonna be Joe Kelly and Brendan Hunt, who I'd known for many, many years. Brendan, again, football nut, and Joe knows a little bit, and then I know nothing. You know, it's like a decent combo. And then also, it's one of those, you know, friendships that you have, that when you're making each other laugh, you know, you're doing something right. If I'm making them laugh, if they're making, you know, me and if Joe's making me and Brendan laugh, you know, like that triangle kind of thing. And me and my partner at the time, we're living up in this place called Nichols Canyon, and I had a pool there, and we came over and we just like, just one sheet of paper, just beat out ideas, just a few ideas, like something silly, like kicking, missing a goal, having it go over, you know, the crossbar, and Ted thinking that that was 3 points, like an American football field goal. And we just probably put out about, you know, 8 to 15 ideas. And in the moment of that, yeah, I just sort of was like, you know, maybe it was the sky, maybe it was the water, maybe it was the friendship. But yeah, they were just like, what do we call the guy? I go, Ted Lasso.
So it literally came to you?
Yeah.
On your head?
Yeah, like
it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I was trying to think of like the you know, anagrams that it could have come from. And, you know,
that's
also, Ted also, debt also, we're in debt as well as all
this. Yeah, nothing that deep. And yet we've sort of, you know, the lasso of truth, you know, like I just like the idea of a single word, first name, you know, like Tom, Ted, Tim, whatever. And then
double syllable.
No, a noun specifically.
Oh, I see.
I just thought that was like funny.
Because all the great songwriters, you know, in Sammy Khan's day, they went for a three-syllable name.
Oh, did they?
It wasn't their real name. Their nom de plumes were that Cole Porter. They had a not dissimilar.
I like that. I do the same thing when Olivia and I named our son. We named him Otis Sudeikis because I like the cadence.
Otis is great.
Otis Sudeikis. And then Daisy Sudeikis.
Otis Otto. We're all fans of Otis and Otto. I'm still phased, just so you know. I haven't settled down. This interview. Paul McCartney played in my garden once. Still more phased than that.
Oh my goodness.
Seriously. Rock and roll. Let's talk about rock and roll. The soundtrack. People are loving the soundtrack. Yeah. The music's really important. It's sometimes hard to get songs to be cleared for TV shows. Who is the music fan in the gang?
I mean, that's all of us, you know. Again, right. You know, we have a great music supervisor, Tony, TVP. We call him the MVP because he gets the rights to these things that people are like, we can't have you do that. I mean, getting Let It Go from Frozen for Hannah, you know, as Rebecca to sing in our seventh episode, first season, was a to-do. I mean, Frozen 2 had just come out. I mean, the song was basically on like moratorium. No, you can't go anywhere near it. But a lot of people anticipate those songs, because we're a comedy show, to be used to make fun of the thing behind it. But then we've had the songwriters reach out to Hannah like online to say thank you for using the song in which you did. So I think sometimes it's about the intention of what it is. Sometimes I write to music. I'm excited about some of the cues we have coming up for the back half of this season. But, you know, it comes from everywhere. The best idea wins, you know, whether it be, you know, Tony or his partner Krista, whether it be, you know, Brendan, myself, you know, my sister's friends, Marcus Mumford has chimed in.
Yeah.
Our editors always pick good choices. So it's just, it's like, it's what's going on there. But a lot of times, if it's a 90s hip-hop song, it was probably me.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we did this with Let It Go.
Yeah.
And we're not sure it's legal. You can advise us on this. Hang on a second.
Breakfast show. Breakfast show.
Comes to court.
Doesn't that fall under parody? Do you guys have that here, where a parody or satire?
I don't know.
Even though that song is obviously, that version is obviously better than the original, so I don't know if what's a parody of which at this point. You know.
Okay. Do you think we're okay?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
Disney's got other things to worry about right now.
Oh, all right.
You know, they're starting fights. They're not starting fights. They're fighting back over there in Florida. So yeah, I think you'll be all right.
When a character like Nate ends up doing what he does at the end of season two, and lots of people still jump in on the bus, so we're not going to say what that is.
Yeah.
But when he ends up doing that at the end of season two, and we meet him, and he's the opposite of that when we first meet him, do you lot, you clever people at the keyboards, do you already know that he has to be like that when we first meet him, because he's going to be like this later on?
Not completely, but it came very clear during the breaking of, meaning that, you know, coming up with the stories for season one. Not like in a Bible way, it's imbued by, sometimes the characters lead you there. You know, just like the name Ted Lasso pops into your head, you know, or the, you know, the look and feel of the Believe sign. It's like,
I've not heard of Believe Sign. What is that about?
No, I know. It's on your head. It's on, like, I'm looking right at it, I think. But yeah, those things kind of like show up, and then, you know, just like an actor taking over a role, we'll guide you to where it's supposed to go. So it became very, very clear when I was writing episode 7 of what was going to happen with Nate. And so then by the time we're shooting it, then it's me sitting around, you know, a table with Nick Muhammad, who plays the part so beautifully and so dastardly, and that I can speak to him about a few things that I know are coming down the pike.
I mean, when he goes through his it's not a transformation, is it? It's sort of transmogrification. I mean, it doesn't get more Jekyll and Hyde than that. And when he changes character, it is like a different person's playing Nate. Because how do you do that? I mean, you know, because you do the same thing.
Sure.
Because you get Ted gets really angry, and, you know, all the sort of the deep hidden trauma comes out, which is so moving again, because everything's so frothy at the time. And it can be, sometimes things can be too frothy for their own good. And then you go, no, because we're going all the way down here. Unless you go all the way, then you get caught between a rock and a hard place.
It's so true. And we're trying to mess with like the perceptions, and like, you know, television's been around for many, many years. So we have a lot of preconceived notions as both human beings, but then also as an audience, even more so as an audience, weirdly. We put the shows in these boxes. We put the characters in these boxes, you know, people trying to like make connections that aren't there. Because I remember, you know, giving the pilot script to like friends, and they would read it. They go, I don't know if Ted should end up with Keeley. That was their takeaway from reading the pilot.
Yeah,
it's like, well, why do you think that that's going to happen? It's like, oh, I guess you're right. Well, then I guess, yeah, him and Rebecca make sense. I was like, why do you think that? Yeah. And we're just like, man and woman must get together, man, and, you know, yeah. And so you sort of played towards that. So yeah, you, towards your original question about Nate, it's like, yeah, you got to like make people love them. That's when things, matters of the heart and betrayal, that's when those things, you really feel those things, is when you've gone the journey of like connection with someone,
yeah.
both with other people or with yourself as an audience member with them. It's, you know, that's just one of those things. We grew up with a lot of great bad guys, you know, in the films and televisions of my youth. And yeah, so we're just sort of doing our version of that.
If comedy doesn't have a heart, it won't have an audience. It's as simple as that.
I don't think, yeah, you'll laugh as hard nor will you rewatch it. I mean, but sometimes just Step Brothers, but Step Brothers has a tremendous heart. I mean, it's all about family and everything. I was going to say, there's some of those scenes, it's infused with the heart, but like sometimes you just like watching, you know, physical comedy. You're just like watching it, yeah. Bunk beds, you know, smush a grown man. That's always fun too.
I already don't want it to end ever. Please don't let that happen.
I have no control. No. No, that's very kind of you. I'm hearing the universe loud and clear.
But do you know what I mean? What shows have you felt like that about?
Oh gosh. I mean, the British Office was a huge influence to me. British Office was like confusing to me in a way. I've spoken about this with friends and a little bit in the press, but like being a 25-year-old, you know, comedy person, you think you know everything. And then I saw what, you know, Ricky and Steven did, just the writing of it. I was like, are they making this up as they go?
I know.
It felt so clever and real and normal, having had temp jobs only a couple years prior, and those feelings, and just so beautifully cast,
awkward and flat at times.
Yeah,
it normal.
It was something. It changed advertising. I mean, McDonald's started to do commercials that, so it felt like that. It's so funny, like. And I remember it was when I first got TiVo or like a DVR, and we were working, doing Second City in Las Vegas, and I'd come home and I'd just be like, and it was only, you know, those handful of episodes, but it also, the thing I loved about it were the tiny arcs. You got to know these characters a lot. And this is something that Brett Goldstein and I spoke about when I, you know.
Before he died.
before he died, and before he was even a writer on the show. It was like the micro arcs of that story, you know, like just, it's all about David Brent telling Finchie to F off. You know, you just want him to have the gumption to stick up for himself and stick up for his gal and just not go looking to get this like alpha male's like approval, and just huge influence there. Cheers was another one. Again, had lucky, you know, connection to it, but I just think that show, when I watched Ted Danson, you know, he's just effortless. He's like Cary Grant on TV, like, and the bar just felt so, again, real and
just
authentic.
Just want to go there, man.
Yeah,
just want to hang, man.
Yeah.
Don't interfere. Just want to watch.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be over here.
I'll bring a book. Yeah. It's fine.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness me. The thing about The Office, you know, the things, millions of things about The Office, is that sort of blazed the trail for making sitcoms that previously had laugh tracks not unwatchable, but you watch them about anything, that is it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
To hear people laughing at, by the way, count me in, you know, friends, etc. Filmed in front of a live audience, whatever it is. But now it's so bizarre to see them.
Yeah.
Because at first, not hearing laughter, thought, oh, this isn't funny. What? Because you're not hearing other people laughing.
Right.
No, this is really funny. And you can own the laugh yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you watch things, but, you know, I often think, oh, God, that's funny. But I don't laugh.
Sometimes. Oh, absolutely. That's, you know, a comedy writer, like, cliche.
I'm just like, my brain is melting. This is so clever. It's so funny. It's so profound. It's so thoughtful. The swearing on the show. So I watch it with my 14-year-old son, who ironically just finished watching all the American Offices and didn't know what to watch next. Right?
Great show.
So I said, Noah, you might want to try Ted Lasso. He said, I did. I said, just give it another go.
Yeah.
So he watched it first when he was sort of 12, 13. So we watch it together now, side by side.
Yeah.
It's a side by side. And you know, blokes are very good side by side, better than head on.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
There's a lot of that going
football,
on in the show.
That's why football stadiums are designed that way, right?
That's why you have the doggy crew.
The Diamond Dogs.
The Diamond Dogs.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
100%. Yeah.
You know, the more men in the conversation, the more sort of intimate and truthful the conversation may be, as opposed to, it's the opposite of, you know. Yeah. Other occasions. So we watch it side by side. So he's 14. He hears all the swear words, right? And I said before, you know, there's nothing wrong with swear words per se. You know, there are some things very wrong with certain words.
Mm-hmm.
But the swear words in your show, they're not anti or pro-faith, culture or creed.
Right.
They're just there.
Yeah.
And it's really, really funny swearing, right? And it's so funny that obviously one of the characters, if you don't know the show, one of the characters' nieces gets called out for swearing at school, and the character Roy Kent, Brett's character, gets called into school to be asked where she's getting this swearing from. Before he's asked that, he swears, and then it's obvious where he's getting she's getting the swearing from. But that is clearly a decision you've made to say to the world, along with other messages you want to say to the world, swearing is, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say the W word on radio here, and yet it's a nonsense word in the States.
It's
and
so that's, crazy.
Isn't that funny? Like, and yet y'all throw the C word around like nothing I've ever seen. And that's the, you know, they don't let us say that, you know, Apple didn't not let us, but like encouraged us not to, you know? And so because we had a whole scene about that.
Because it would.
Yeah. Because the backlash in the States or in certain segments of the population, I completely got that. But that was a little bit of what the monologue was about. It was May, the barmaid, was giving us, you know, well, here's what it means here.
How
and
great
giving.
Is she?
She's so great. I mean, Annette, and is such a soul. And again, there's things coming up down the season that were her taking over her character, sending me a poem. And me being like, taking that as a suggestion, she was just like, "Doesn't this remind you of Ted and May?" And I was like, "Yeah, it does." And you know, that'll reveal itself, how, you know. But that's taking her idea or just her notion for the character and the relationship during the summer, and then remembering it, holding on to it, and us bringing it, looping it back around into the writer's room. But the swearing, yeah, I mean. I tell my kids, because my son and daughter watch it, and they're 6.5 and 9, and so. You know, they refer to Roy Kent as King of the F, you know, you know, but I say to them, you know, same thing when we're listening to that aforementioned, you know, 90s hip hop, I go, you can hear these words, you can't say them. Right,
like that's he just so can't. He just not when I'm in the room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You can say it amongst each other. You know, that's banter.
Dad, but, we've been saying it for years. Man.
I know, but I blame my dad. My dad took me to see Beverly Hills Cop when I was 9 years old in the theater, and yet an incredible movie. You know, has changed my point of view of superheroes, of you know, class, of race. Like, I mean, and just what is funny and what's cool.
Beverly Hills Cop is such an amazing film.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first 10 minutes of Beverly Hills
Absolutely.
Cop, what happens?
Yeah.
Because it's not what you think. It's a setting up of the culture and the environment.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's basically, it starts off and it looks like a documentary, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
People smoking weed on the stoop and all this kind of
Detroit,
stuff.
Yeah, Detroit, and it's blue and gray and just, yeah.
And how good was he? How good is he?
So, I mean, he's the best. He's. I'm glad people are, like, I got to meet him at Saturday Night Live.
Eddie Murphy, by the way.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy, yeah, exactly. Axel Foley. But yeah, that movie, I mean, the fact that we go from Detroit to Beverly Hills within 10 minutes. Like, you know, and you meet everybody, you meet his buddy, you understand why he's going there. It's just brilliantly done.
It's interesting, isn't it, that we talk about this, because those films actually sort of were The Office before The Office, because those 80s comedy feature films, because they were full-on comedies, but they were with no gags, with no laugh track again, and they were doing what TV caught up and has started doing
Absolutely.
Now. And I always wondered, you know, whether it's Beverly Hills Cop or 48 Hours or like Big or, you know, Pretty Woman or whatever they were. They were funny and heartfelt at the same time, which is what your show's all about. And because a lot of your gang come from the film world, you know, there's a lot of big film ideas, you know, gifted to not a small screen, but now, you know, it's still a television show.
Yeah.
The way you exchange different conversations, you know, between two different ensembles to get the same point across, you know, which at the funeral or whatever it may be.
Sure.
All roads at some point to anybody who ever wants to have fun lead to Holland and Amsterdam.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, it's
right.
The bullseye.
So you were there like before, during, and I presume after.
Yeah.
Tell us how Holland featured with you and Brendan first off.
Oh, well, yeah, but Brendan, Joe, and I have all worked and spent time at a place called Boom Chicago, which is an English-speaking, American-owned theater there in Amsterdam, in the Leidseplein area when we were there. And it's in a different location now. And yeah, we got to do sketch and improv for, you know, worldwide audiences. I mean, it was a very small thing that three fellows from Northwestern University in Illinois started with. They went there on a class trip. They're like, oh, we should do an improv show here, an improv theater, you know, and they were enjoying all the spoils of the town, as most Americans and Australians I found do. And then it's now here that it is, almost 30 years later, they're doing all that. And we, you know, Brendan and I, that's where, let's see, where do I start? I mean, Brendan loved American football, ended up moving there, ended up living there for 5 years. His first place was a flat with like five Dutch fellas. They're all watching Euro Cup, and the you know, the Dutch team is doing fantastic. Is in a wonderful period of Ajax's, you know, history. And Brendan fell in love with that game and became you know, 85% of that character that he plays on the show. He is truly like an amazing, amazing brain. The guy you want on your pub trivia team with any subject. And he brings that same enthusiasm and fervor when he speaks about the game. And so then he and I started playing FIFA on PlayStation, in the dressing room between shows, and he would explain to me what the heck was going on, because I like basketball, so he would use the 90s, you know, Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan, etc., to sort of explain to me who Terry Henry was, or David Beckham, you know. He'd try to break it down for me metaphorically, and then that just became this way that we communicated, and then that was in 2000, end of 2000, and then, again, you know, you flash forward to 2013.
I mean, there's a lot of
the show came from
the Netherlands in... Coach Beard.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a lot of that sort of quiet hedonism
exactly,
in him. And also, I presume, in Brendan as well, to be
100%,
honest.
100%, yeah. I mean, those pants that he wears in episode 9.
Explains so much.
Oh, he would absolutely have owned those pants. You know,
there's something about the
Low
Country in Scandinavia, in their mindset and their outlook on the world, where they don't worry themselves about the nonsense. Other countries have a lot of noise about and low signal with regards to.
Yeah.
And I love them for that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I think it's amazing.
No, it's, and that episode was really special because it was a chance to sort of give back to a place that had really opened our eyes, not just because of the things that are legal there. I mean, I know that's a little bit cheeky wink wink that we do in the show, but, you know, we're proud of the fact that we never mentioned marijuana or weed at all during the, you know, a 63-minute episode of a town that from Americans' point of view is known for that and you know, the red light district. So, yeah, we try to subvert that again, those expectations.
Let's talk about the casting.
Please,
right?
Yeah. Theo Park, our cast director, our local.
Oh,
she's amazing.
How many awards has she won, by the way?
I mean, not enough.
Yeah.
I mean, but I also like casting directors in general are just badasses. They're wizards and mystics that see the best in people. That is their job. Like, how special is that? Like, they can go about it, cynically, and be like, oh, here comes another blonde guy, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But they don't. They literally find these jewels in the rough. You know, there's a woman named Allison Jones who's, she did like The American Office. And when casting the show, I've always got on with her. I think she's an incredible, like, you know, human being. And again, just has that aura about her that recognizes these other auras in people. And I was like, who do we get to, like, you can't do it, can you? She says, no, I don't know anybody over there. I was like, okay. She goes, Theo Park is who you want, Theo Park. I was like, okay, I got to meet this guy. It was a woman. And she has just been a delight, to us, and it's given us so many people, and have given so many of those people careers. You know what I mean? Like, even though they had them, but with the platform that this show has afforded folks, you know, myself included, it's like she's changed people's lives. She's helped people buy homes.
Well, Theo comes from God, of course.
I wish I knew her parents' names, because I'd you know, check with the middlemen between her and God. Yeah,
yeah, the Holy Spirit.
But yeah, the casting, it's a joy. I mean, there's, you know, the only person that didn't audition, that didn't read, was Juno Temple. And we were looking for someone to play Keeley Jones.
Everybody's so good.
I mean, it's so
good. I was
going
to say Juno's so good, but they're also good. Some of the actors auditioned for multiple parts, didn't they? So who auditioned for a part they didn't get, and then did get a part, now are in it?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit odd, but when we were writing the footballers, there was maybe a debate in the writer's room, not a debate, but a discussion of, like, Do we have two Brits? Do we have, you know, Jamie Tartt and Roy Kent? I personally felt it was important to have people from the same area, just because there's different levels of machismo, you know, even in the north south, like Roy and Jamie. We talked about maybe doing in other regions, right? So then Danny Rojas, the character that is Danny Rojas, we were going to do like a, you know, Latino version, you know, or you know, Spanish. You know, we didn't know what we were going to do, but maybe from some other place, and that was going to be the young, brash, you know, almost like a Ronaldo, like whether he's, you know, Portugal or whatnot, Brazil, etc. And Phil came in to audition for the character of Danny Rojas when he was written still as, like, you know, an American, you know, up and comer, but he did an accent and he was brilliant. We didn't know. I mean, he looked like a young Marlon Brando doing this accent. And then we were like, he's like, well, he's hitting all the jokes. He understands all the beats, you know. And I was like, well, he's a white fella, you know. And you know, that doesn't fly, you know. Like, that wouldn't be authentic. So then, you know, the Danny Rojas character became like this joyful character, especially once we saw Christo.
And read Christo was a footballer.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, yeah. And we'd have people do these auditions. You know, they'd send in tapes where they do the audition, then they'd, you know, do some keepy uppy, you know, do stuff. And there were some really funny things where, like, you know, a couple people for the character Soccer Girl is played by this young woman, Shannon. You know, people breaking windows. You know, it was like, whoops. You know, but still, like, with So like that would be an example of like Phil auditioning for that. Like I know. I believe Nick Mohammed, you know, was going to read maybe for Higgins.
Yeah.
You know, and then but
he
then,
wanted that, didn't he?
I think so. Yeah. Because I think he felt the Nate character, the way it was initially written, felt similar to stuff that either he had done or was working on. And I completely get that. I know I've made choices for films based on what film I just did last. So like, you know, it's very common for and makes total sense to me that an actor would want to do something they hadn't just done.
If any of you were as close to Ted Lasso as you can be without writing it, it might be Christo, mightn't it? It might be.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, Brendan, his beard is pretty close, although Brendan will admit, and it's true, is more loquacious, but it's a lovely
I think brain meets spirit would be Christo and Brendan, wouldn't it?
Maybe, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. I would, Hannah's really that tall.
Oh, you know? She's, by the way, I mean, all of them, just keep it coming.
It really is.
It's good, man. Oh my God. It's it's like the Beatles. You're like the Beatles.
Again, this is obnoxious. I'm so glad you're saying it, not me.
No, you hang on. I mean? But we know the Beatles. There were 7 Beatles. There weren't 4.
Yeah, right. Okay. Are you going George Martin and like Pete Best? You're going all the way? Where are you getting that number from?
People that were in the Beatles. So Pete was in the Beatles. Yeah. There's a guy called Jimmy Nicol in the Beatles. Okay. And there was Stuart Sutcliffe in the Beatles.
Okay, oh yes.
As well. So that's these 7 Beatles.
Yes.
And but of course they could have all had a band each, and what you had with the Beatles is you had 4 band leaders agreeing to be in the same band and bringing all their strengths and all their genius and all their God-given whatever it was to this incredible explosion of something that had never happened before and will never happen again.
Yeah.
That's Ted Lasso.
That's, I mean,
I really think so.
That's, I mean, this is a lot. That I really appreciate this, man, because I can see it in your eyes. How much you mean it.
I know.
It's very flattering, but I feel that way when I look around. I mean, at the end of the season one, I remember being in the makeup trailer, and then we have all the headshots of every, and there's like, you know, 150. It's like, it's a big show, and it's only gotten bigger, right? It's almost like The Simpsons at this point, in only 3 seasons with how many characters we have. And I looked around and I was just like, we have no turkeys. Nobody here caused a stink. Nobody here, like, that's even behind the scenes, much less getting the opportunity to be involved with the show soup to nuts, from writing it to editing it. I love watching these people perform. They knock my socks off, and they do things that I know that they didn't think that they could do, whether it be learn a monologue in an afternoon, or whether it plays something like the journey that Nick Mohammed takes us on as Nate, to go to the places he had to go to play evil without judgment, like Jamie Tartt did, like, you know, Jimmy Lance does as Trent Crimm, you know, I mean, it's, you know, as Anthony Head does as Rupert, like, just irredeemable. And to play it with sincerity, honesty, and no judgment, because comedians want to be liked. Most people want to be liked. And to play unlikable is incredible, because it allows for those depths that you're feeling. And
the
we
range.
Love playing. Yeah, you can bring people really high and bring people really low, at least attempt to. You know, some people don't want to go on the ride. You can't. That's all right. You know, you don't get many hugs from people with their arms crossed, you know, but that's what they're doing.
That's right.
You know?
We're almost out of time, right?
Why?
I don't know why. What is time anyway?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? It's going to be over before you know it.
Yeah. Isn't all of it? What are you going to do with it?
So you're going to be talking about this when it's over, about how great it was, but it's not over yet, and you're still in it.
Indeed, yeah.
How does that play in your mind and your heart?
It's flattering that people, you know, want more, flattering. But also, you got the same way these characters had led us, the same way these things have arrived. You know, when I sit here and I you know, invoke the universe, I'm being sincere, like getting to come here, which we hadn't done press here. You know, you and I spoke a couple years ago, you know, and here we are in, you know, the world's changed. Everybody's individual life has changed. We all got, you know, stuck in our homes. That was the universe probably trying to shake us up, right? And so I'm still listening to him and her. And they and them, like all of it, you know, like just like what have you got for me? And so to hear people's enthusiasm for this show, and also the way it's, you know, helped them, you know, and the way families watch it together, that's something that's we all take huge advisement from, you know, and but it has to be the stories, it has to be the characters. It can't just be because we want it, you know, like there's a lot of things we don't get in life that we want, but, you know, it's the journey to get there. So I have to get kind of done with this chapter. That's where we sort of looked at this. You know, we modeled it literally after the British Office. You know, we just thought it was going to be, you know, six episodes, Christmas special. You know, and here it's turned into this, you know, with the three-season arc.
And 49 minutes, one episode, 32 minutes the next episode, yeah. Whatever the episode needs to be.
Yes.
That's the joy of the new age of television.
It is. And the fact that Apple is willing to dance with us that way is really, really awesome of them, because I don't know if most places would do that. And some people may feel that it's indulgent, but we're indulging these characters and these stories because it just needs to be. These stories need to be told, and if it's not, if they're not, then I would be, I'd feel we're being irresponsible towards them.
Pre-warned is pre-armed.
Mm-hmm.
How many more may I have? What do you think?
I mean, we got, you know, episode 8 next week, and then 9, 10, 11, 12. That's it. That's it for now, yeah. I mean, I hear you loud and clear, though, man. Look, I mean, when I see, I can't even speak towards it because I'm still in the thick of it. You know, we want this story to grow out because maybe people at the end would be like, oh, no, you know what? That's it. Thank you. Like, that's all we need. You know? And
well, it will tell you, won't it?
I truly do believe that. Yeah, yeah. It has led the way.
And if it doesn't, Apple TV Plus will.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll let me know. But it's not, you know, it's not a negotiation tactic. I'm not trying to be political. I'm not trying to hem and haw. It's truly, once we get through with this, I can't wait for Brendan and Joe and I to get back in a pool together and figure out what comes, you know, from, through, you know, betwixt. But yeah, those Beatles that you talk about, the show, the thing we talk about, platonic soulmates, people that just find each other at the right time, right place, and enjoy, and to enjoy each other, and to make something that truly harmonized, like to make something that, you know, to make a voice that it can only happen through the triangulation or however many people you have. And have that just beam out. That's part of the fun of getting to do it. This is the only way I've ever known to do it, through improv and sketch, through my family, you know, through my friends. It's like, okay, how do we all get in this boat together and row in one direction? Where are we going? I don't know.
And we'll ultimately, the only way to keep it forever is to let it go.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah.
In the end.
Yeah.
Tilly, who works on the show, made you these.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just... I mean, not only the biscuits, but the box alone. I love that folks can't find this box, so people craft. Oh, those look lovely. Yeah.
I know you're busy. I know you're so busy. It's ridiculous how busy you are. Please have photographs with as many people in this building as possible before you go. Please, beg you.
Happily, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
It's the best.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for such thoughtful questions and observations. I mean, it's really,
man,
it's really overwhelming.
That was it. We did it. We did it. We got there. Didn't mess it up.
Didn't mess it up. How are you going to mess it up, you think?
How long you got? It's all in the books. Goodbye, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.